Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio. Brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com. Now, here's your host.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one. But before we get to our guest today, this work would not be possible without the support of our sponsor, OnPay. Please support them so we can continue to share these important stories. Well, our guest today is with LexisNexis Risk Solutions. His name is Flavio Villanestra. Welcome, Flavio.
Thank you very much, Lee. I'm glad to be here.
Well, before we get too far into things, tell us about LexisNexis Risk Solutions. How are you serving folks?
I can tell you a little bit about us and how we are doing here. LexisNexis Risk Solutions is a global information company. We typically serve corporate customers, and we have presence in almost every country out there. We provide risk solutions. These are risk management solutions to entities like banks and financial services and insurance and government and healthcare. And we are, of course, in these rough times for everyone, trying to help as much as we can as well with global data for good type of initiatives, including some COVID-19 tracker initiatives and other things, trying to help the world community as much as we can.
Now, talking about using data for good, can you tell us a little bit about how you can help kind of with this COVID-19 social mapping, the global social mapping? How can you what data are you using, and then how can you use that to kind of get a better handle on things?
Absolutely. We have a number of initiatives as part of our own organization and our parent company, RELX Group, to help humanity, help communities with a number of data for good initiatives. And in the current times, certainly data for good in COVID-19 times is extremely important. We have a number of individual initiatives there within COVID-19. One of those is we are doing research, and this research is doing the analysis on the spread of the disease. We did something similar for the Ebola crisis a few years ago, and we are hoping that with this type of research, we can help experts and researchers and communities better prepare for the spread and the evolution of the disease. Additionally, we have also built a number of sites and components online for people, and people could be researchers or even general public, to access to have a better understanding of how to prepare resources and to also plan for the potential for the evolution in each one of the communities. And in the case of one of these solutions, even to the county level in the U.S.,
Now, when we're kind of dealing with this, let's speak specifically about the United States. Well, when we're dealing with a pandemic of this kind, how important is it to identify the at-risk population so that their right kind of resources are available for the people who need it most?
That is extremely, extremely important. Like many other diseases, this disease has really a significant and severe impact in the less favored communities usually. So being able to identify the places where some resources are needed, particularly in those communities that need those that are at biggest risk, is extremely, extremely important. In some ways, even if we are unable to stop the disease because we don't have a vaccine yet, ensuring that we can in some ways mitigate the risk of people getting infected, for example, through social distancing, can help reduce the significant overhead and the impact on the already stressed out healthcare resources, right? Places where there are not enough beds in ICU, places where doctors are already under significant stress because of the avalanche of cases. Some of the areas that are very, very important have to do with looking at those healthcare resources and looking at utilization and availability in across the U.S. and seeing how they map to those areas that have the biggest risk of spreading the disease. If we can at least control also the total volume at any given time of patients, it doesn't exceed the capacity in those institutions and those medical personnel, we can potentially ensure that those patients get the right attention at the right time. Again, this is something that has the biggest impact in communities that are usually the least favored one. That's why it's so important to pay attention to this.
But the flip side is also important, right? Like in the communities that aren't being as affected right now as much as the ones that are kind of in a critical situation, they might have capacity or equipment that might be able to be shared with these other communities. Isn't it important for them to have that information as well so they can say, you know what, maybe we don't need all these ventilators. Maybe we can share some of these to somebody else in the area that maybe is being harder hit.
Oh, that is absolutely right. You are absolutely on the spot there. It is important to think of this as a global disease. And even if we look at the U.S. scope, it is global in the U.S. Certainly, there are some areas of the U.S. that are now heavily affected, but that doesn't mean that other areas that are less affected should not take an active role and help with the resources they have. This reminds me of over the last 5 years or so, we built a system for an organization called Global Business Coalition for Education. The system is called REACT, and it was a system, and it is a system meant to connect resources with those in need. The original goal was not necessarily to address COVID-19, because that wasn't a thing at the time, but it was to bring those that can help and those that have spare resources around the world to those that are in need of those resources, which is something that is very difficult to do otherwise. There is no matchmaking ability out there. So this has been quite successful. And I think something similar should happen here in the U.S. Now, there is the possibility that in a disease that spreads so quickly, like COVID-19, you may end up playing whack-a-mole, where you whack one area, you put enough resources there, and then the resources that you took from a different area are now in high need in that other area. So we need to be careful to ensure that we understand the evolution of the disease and how we control that evolution as much as we can, of course, to not get in a situation where the efforts to help certain areas in need are in detriment of other areas that will be in need later on.
Now, what lessons do you think, when we're looking back, when this is kind of more stabilized, what lessons are we going to learn to be better prepared for future pandemics?
I think there will be quite several lessons that we will learn. Certainly, the understanding that in some cases, some of our, I know that we are humans and we've been humans for a very long time, and human contact is extremely important to us. But we will potentially be more understanding also of the fact that some degree of social distancing, or at least some degree of safe interaction with other humans is important. We'll also probably understand the value of the ability to do activities remotely, and this includes teleworking and other activities as well. This might be the trigger to move some of the things that we do typically face to face into a more of online type of approach. It will certainly change the way we understand, I think, the impact of diseases, especially contagious diseases like this one. I think we can probably all have some reflection in the back where maybe we underestimated the impact of this type of disease at the very beginning, and that underestimation of the disease might have had a significant impact on the way the disease evolved. Perhaps, and of course, it's very easy to do this type of retroactive analysis when you are on the other side, right? But maybe you don't see this at the beginning. If we took a more active stance at the time, maybe if we started doing more social distancing initially, maybe if we did more testing or we developed testing faster, maybe if the original discovery of the first few cases was communicated faster, we would not be in the situation we are in today. So I think there are plenty of lessons for everyone. I think we can all learn this valuable lesson, and it will change the way we operate in the future. I think this will have a long-lasting impact in humanity as a whole.
Now, where does kind of the work that you're doing regarding data and data solutions come in where with testing? Does it have a place in the world of testing?
Yes. So one of the things that I mentioned is that one initiative we have was to build this global U.S. Tracking map of areas. This is county by county. It's an interactive map online and available to anyone, where each one of these counties is flagged based on a number of important metrics. These are different dimensions that are influencing the way the disease spreads or impacts. Things like, for example, number of beds that you have available in healthcare institutions in that area, the type of socioeconomic situation and conditions in the area, and on. And based on this, we can truly identify these populations at risk. Of course, doing testing, even if it's not early testing, which should be ideal, but even at this point, testing is extremely important. Testing can help us identify individuals that go that could be infected and go undetected for a long time, and maybe because the disease does not manifest itself with any symptoms or with very low symptoms, these individuals can still be carrying the disease to other individuals. Testing can be the one tool that helps us put ourselves before the disease and stop it. If we can find some of these asymptomatic or low symptomatic carriers in the communities, and we can quickly crack down on those by ensuring that they get social isolation and treatment as available, we can truly reduce the potential for another avalanche or the peak of cases around the U.S. And of course, this is until we wait for a vaccination. Vaccine really is the ultimate solution, but that's still several months away at the minimum.
Now, how do you balance kind of this kind of social mapping project with, people's privacy?
Well, that's an important question. So in these cases, we do not use any people identifiable data. We have just institutional data for the most part and statistical data, which means that we can tell you this particular county has this many cases, this many patients that have been diagnosed with this, this many deaths as well, and say this many beds in ICU, this number, this type of resources in healthcare, but there is no personal identifying information. That's extremely important. You don't want to make your cure worse than the disease, right? This is extremely critical to maintain privacy of people and understand that their information is their information and that cannot be divulged in any way. So we are extremely careful there. We do understand our responsibility and privacy and security of the data that we handle. And this is across all of our data services and services in general and organization. We have been doing data analytics for decades now. And we have understood very early in the game that that it's extremely important to handle this data securely, manage privacy adequately, and also support the laws and regulations that are around this data. As you can imagine, all of this healthcare data is regulated under the HIPAA standard, and that is very strict when it comes to making the data public in any way.
Now, how has LexisNexis been dealing with kind of being, I don't want to say forced, but being encouraging the employees to be kind of now remote workers? How have you been able to kind of do business with all your people kind of working mainly at home nowadays, but still having access to all this data and keeping everything secure and things like that?
That's also another great question, Lee. We as an organization, we have always been very safe and secure-minded. And this comes not just to security of the data that we manage, but also the safety and security of our employees as well. So we have a very comprehensive information security program. We ensure that we manage and control all of the cybersecurity risk, which, of course, as you can imagine, nowadays is quite high in everyone's mind if you read the news. And we ensure that our employees still have the access that they require based on their role in the organization, no more than that, of course, and that that access is still securely and safely provided when they are at home, of course, using our work systems. Every employee gets assigned our own computers, our own laptops. Every employee has access to any sensitive resources through encrypted connections, VPNs, and the jargon. All of this data is encrypted in transit and at rest. All of this data is protected, and where data elements should not be disclosed to an employee, are masked or not available directly on the access to the employee has. And plenty of other controls around ensuring that the data is available to those that need to have access to the data, but never beyond that access. And as I said before, we've been doing this for 20 years, so it's ingrained in the way we behave as an organization. Now, the other aspect to this is how we decided to ensure that our employees could have access to all of these things and continue to work properly from home. And this was also an early decision that we took because we believe that we are as good as our employees, right? Our organization is valuable just because we have the valuable talent that we have. So ensuring that our employees are safe and that we keep them safe for the whatever time this crisis goes through is extremely important. So we encourage our employees to work from home, and we provide them with the tools that they need to work from home effectively. And at this point, I can tell you that this is also something that might change our minds on how much work can be done effectively from home as well. So maybe it's something to consider down the road as well, if we truly to force employees to work from the office, or we can have some more flexible approach to workplace.
It could be a silver lining.
Yes, I think, yeah. Look, unfortunately, and humanity has been going through so many of these things over the million years we've been around, and there is always a silver lining. There is always something that gets out. Yes, this is a dramatic event. This is a crisis. This is very hard for everyone. But I think there is always something that you can learn from it, and we can get better, and we can be better just because we went through this. At some point, it will be just a memory, and some lessons that we learned hopefully will make us better.
Absolutely. Well, if somebody wanted to learn more about LexisNexis Risk Solution, do you have a website?
Of course. The website is www.lexisnexis.com/risk.
All right. Well, Flavio, thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's important work. And thank you for sharing your story today.
Thank you very much.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.
Today's episode of Atlanta Business Radio is brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com.